Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. So excited to be with you each and every Saturday for 8.5 years with Steve Paulette right at my side. So much fun. Last week, calling in at 8:15 was the commissioner of the Big Three Basketball, the great Clyde Drexler. You can listen to last week's show on the podcast. What a pleasure. And they're going to be playing at the Staples Center tomorrow. So how cool is that? So much fun. I will be surfing, so I will not be going to that game. But if you get a chance, don't miss it. I'm so happy that my guest this morning called in at 4 o'clock in the morning his time from Hawaii. He's like an older brother to me, Todd. He's a surf instructor on the beach, Waikiki, behind the Duke Kahanamoku sculpture. You just go there and say, "Where's Todd? I want to have a surf lesson." Believe it or not, what do they call it? The Coconut Highway? They will get you. Oh, he's over there under that umbrella. And you'll have the greatest time. I've known him forever, more than 30 years. And he's taught over 30,000 people how to surf over the years. It's incredible. Jewish guy from Brooklyn who literally looks like Duke Kahanamoku. One day I was out with him a few years ago, and he said, "Robbie, I'm watching you surf. You need to move your feet more. You can't just pop up on the board and just stand there. You got to walk forward. You got to walk backwards. You know what you should do? You should take a dance class. You need to improve your footwork. You'll get more out of your surfing." And that stuck in my head for all these years. So when I pop up on my surfboard, immediately, every ride I make on a board, I think of Todd, that I've got to move forwards and backwards. Maybe that's a metaphor for life, like everything in surfing is. The nose of your board is the future. The tail of your board is your past. The surfer stands in the middle and learns to live in the moment. So many metaphors about life from surfing. But Todd said it's all about footwork. So you know how much I love the world of art, the world of sports, and the worlds of surgery and medicine. They're all the same to me. So where is the footwork in sports? Well, right now the U.S. Open is going on, and we're watching probably the greatest tennis player of all time, Roger Federer. What makes him so special? Well, from John McEnroe looking at him and just cavilling every time he watches him play, the greatest players of all time all agree he's the best. So Paul Annacone sat down and analyzed footwork in Federer, Nadal, and Djokovic. What is it that they're doing in their footwork that makes them so elite? It's not all the same thing. For Federer, it's the pace of his footwork, the angles. For Nadal, it's just speed. And Djokovic is kind of a combination of the two. Listen to Paul Annacone talk about Roger Federer's footwork.
Here's a look at Roger Federer. This is proactive footwork, where he does not want to leave the baseline, and everything for him is about cutting the court off. It's always about moving diagonally into the court to take time away from the opponent. This is the quintessential proactive footwork. Do not back up, move forward. Look at Roger, a little block here. He gets that ball not because of his speed, it's because of his footwork. Look at where he moves. He's already inside the baseline, and he's moving before Nick Kyrgios even hits this angle. Roger Federer is a master at this. He's a master at finding and understanding which way to go early.
So that's the secret. What about Nadal? It's his speed.
This man is a little bit different. Rafael Nadal can back up, he can take time, and he can dare you with his speed from the back of the court. He can move backwards and cover laterally and wear you down and then come up with the shots. This is a little bit more reactive. Look at Rafa back here going side to side. He's not afraid to give up the space. Why? Because he dares his opponent. This suits his style of play. It's all about your style of play. That's how you want to try to move. Rafa's style of play is daring people. It can wear you down. It's oppressive, and it can be offensive when it needs to be, but he knows how to manage it.
And Djokovic is somewhere in between.
The third kind is Novak Djokovic. He's a hybrid between the two. Tends to stand in between where Rafa and Roger stands, cuts the court off with his length. He dares you with his width. Look at him reach out there. Does the same on the backhand, the open stance backhand. Doesn't back up quite as much as Rafa, but he makes the court small because of his width. He doesn't move too far deep, uses that width to dare his opponents, can change directions at will, and he can come forward and will come forward, but it's on his terms, on his conditions. And again, this is about understanding what kind of player you are. It's not about you have to move this way. And those three guys are so good at knowing their games, they match their footwork.
And on grass at Wimbledon, there's been nobody better. And here's Roger, the man himself, talking about why his footwork is so great on the most difficult surface to play on. It's not asphalt. It's not clay. It's grass.
The footwork on grass comes easier to me than for other guys. I'm not sure. And then because I have a decent speed on the serve and I can serve kick and slice, maybe also the grass helps me just a little bit to get a few more free points than what it would on some other surfaces. So I'm not sure. I think maybe my balance, you know, I think I have good balance. I rarely slip or I rarely fall down or lose my balance in general. And on grass, it's the same. So for me, if I'm playing on grass or not, it doesn't make that much of a difference. It comes natural. And when it's natural, you know, it's you don't think about it. It's just, it just happens. And yeah, so I think I must say probably it's the balance. I'm not sure.
Where in the world of art do we see the greatest footwork? For me, going to college in New York, I was introduced to the dance, the modern dance of Alvin Ailey, and it blew me away. Alvin Ailey had already died. He died in 1989 at only 58 years old. But Alvin Ailey changed the world in the 20th century in dance. There was no dance company that was open to an African-American in the 40s and 50s. So Alvin Ailey created his own dance company using music that he heard, using inspiration from his world growing up in the South. And in 1960, he wrote, choreographed a dance called Revelations. This is a song from Revelations. And I want you to imagine you're in the theater. The curtains open, this music starts to play, and from both sides of the stage come flying the most athletic, gifted dancers you've ever seen. Who knows best about footwork than a dancer? To get you inspired, just listen to a little bit of the song that'll be playing to be a part of Revelations. It's called Sinner Man, and it's related to Todd in Hawaii because it's about running to a rock and the rock melts, which is lava. And you can run to the sea, which is the ocean, and you can try to surf yourself away, but the Lord will find you, it says. So beautiful. The pace is slow. The dancers are now entering the stage, and now they start flying.
Run to the rock. Run, won't you hide me?
Go on YouTube. Run, watch this. Hide me, run the rock. If you're really run, lucky, you hide me, go see it in person.
On that day, the Lord sits in a man. The rock will be a melting. The Lord
melt that rock if you're hiding behind the rock.
The Lord sits in a man. The rock will be a melting.
Just like a volcano. Well, then I'm going to go to the ocean.
You run to the sea.
So you're running to the sea. He won't hide you. You can surf all you want. I'm going to find you. Oh, so beautiful. He created a dance. He created footwork from his own vision, Alvin Ailey did. Who was Alvin Ailey? What did he sound like? Well, in 1983, he came to UCLA and took questions from the crowd about his vision. Just fantastic. Here he is talking about athleticism and why footwork and dance is so similar to that for athletes.
We teach athletes the same thing that we teach in dance classes. We don't, you know, differentiate. Dancing, of course, is involved with stretching out the muscles as opposed to making clumps of muscles like weightlifting does. And so we believe that I mean, these dancers are as strong as weightlifters because of the training. I mean, the training is push-pull training. You know, you stretch a muscle this way and you stretch it back the other way. So the muscles gain elasticity as well as strength and line, you know.
And it's good for athletes.
The regular dance training is wonderful for athletes. I mean, it stretches the Achilles, the feet. It strengthens all the inner muscles, the outer thing. You know, it's wonderful for athletes. I think have you been doing classes? Well, you should. It'll prove your coordination, your appreciation of your body. It'll make you understand your extremities and where your running is coming from, or whatever sports you're interested in. You know, it'll make it a little bit more finite for you. It'll define what sets of muscles you're using.
Just like a good running back or linebacker takes ballet classes to improve their footwork on the football field, one of the UCLA track stars came to Alvin Ailey and said, "Let's break down the long jump. Help me." And boy, did they help him.
We had a guy in the class yesterday who was what was Daryl?
Long jump.
Daryl is a long jumper. I don't think he's here. But he made Keith break down all the phases of the long jump for him in terms of dance. And we could see that it's the first brush is like a jeté. You brush from under your the bottom of your thigh, and you brush the movement forward and out. And you push off the back foot the way we do when we do jumps. The principles are the same.
He just loves dance. How long does it take to become a dancer? He was asked.
How much drive you have, yeah. It's according to your talent, your musicality, and really how hard you want to work. Martha Graham used to say that it took 10 years to make a dancer, you know, before you can see that inner landscape, which is the soul. But all of us don't have 10 years, you know, to become a dancer. So if you want to dance, you get in there and do it, and it happens. It depends on how much you give to it, you know. If you give a lot to it, you get a lot back very quickly.
How do you write? How do you choreograph a dance? He was asked, what's the process to make this magic happen with footwork? This is what he said.
I usually start with a very good piece of music. I mean, I find that, I mean, I've made dances to silence and dances to music concrète and music électronique and all kinds of music, you know. But I find that I like to have a strong musical base, you know. if the music bores me after a while, then I know the dance is going to bore me after a while. You know, I mean, though we sometimes can take any set of dance movements, I mean, combinations, and you can do them to any kind of music, and it can still have a kind of meaning. But I kind of marry my theme I try to marry the theme with a very good piece of music, and I go from there. I get into the studio with the dancers. I'm turned on by the dancers. I have my own ideas of what I want. The music is leading me. My theme is leading me.
Judith Jameson was one of his great dancers. Here's a woman who came with him to UCLA who's talking about adjusting weight, the key to the footwork in art.
When you discover something that's dangerous for your body, you learn how to hold the weight in a different place, or you learn how to take the emphasis someplace else. If you know that you have to suddenly go down to the floor, you don't just go bang and hit your knees on the floor. You know that you have to hold it here so that you hit the floor very lightly, even though it looks the same. You know, so you have to also learn where the real control and the center of the movement is coming from.
And one of the male dancers having to carry one of the female dancers and dance at the same time. Rather than saying, no, it's hard, it's heavy, he explains you understand with footwork how to balance and use the weight of the other dancer so that it flows. It's amazing, just like surfing, using the energy in the water to ride the wave.
If the choreography is set so that it's counterbalanced, then it works very well.
It's a thing that, again, we're dealing with placement of weight. We're also dealing with elements of floor and not just dealing with arm gestures and pressing dead weight. I'm working with a weight that's alive, that's moving with me and in personal contact continuously. There's no stress or strain at all.
No stress or strain at all. That's why we pursue sports. But that's also why Federer looks so beautiful out on the tennis court. He's barely sweating. He's barely working because he just understands to cut the court off diagonally with his footwork. We're going to watch LeBron James this season, Anthony Davis, Kuzma. It's their footwork that will be the difference. We're going to watch the Rams this season. It's their footwork that will lead to a championship more so than the upper extremities. It's really the key. And in surgery, it's not about me, the surgeon. It's the injuries I see. And one of them is called a dancer's fracture, where you snap the fifth metatarsal, the little toe on your foot, that long bone in the middle of your foot. That's a dancer's fracture. It's fascinating why it breaks in the same spot every time, from Kevin Durant to Pau Gasol to the Lopez brothers. Michael Jordan even had a Jones fracture, a dancer's fracture, because the circulation that comes up the bottom and the circulation into the bone from the top, there's a point where it stops and there's not a lot of blood supply in this one area. And the stress of the foot right in that spot cracks right there in the same spot. And that's why we got to put a screw down the center and shish kebab that bone to fix it. Sometimes we can get away with a boot, but usually we have to put a screw in it. Footwork, the key to life. Coming up next, I'll take your calls. The clinic will be open. The number is 877-710-ESPN. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on ESPN LA 710. Oh, my God. Well, it's Abba. And in Hebrew, that means father. That's about all I'm going to say about Abba. All right, the number is 877-710-ESPN this morning. Like usual, I ate at the pantry. What do you put on your eggs and your well-done potatoes? You put ketchup on it? Sure. For me, all eating is an excuse to put ketchup all over everything. I just want the ketchup. I really don't care what the food is. But I love making the ketchup more flavorful, so I usually sprinkle some Tapatio or Cholula. My mouth is watering already. But I didn't want to do that. So today, I asked for some homemade salsa, which would be good enough to put on the eggs and the potatoes. But do you know what happens when you mix Heinz ketchup with homemade salsa on your eggs and well-done potatoes, and you crack the eggs and you mix it into a big mishmash? It is orgasmic.
Dr. Clapper.
It is just the greatest. I don't know if you're allowed to do that. In New York, I think you get arrested if you put salsa on ketchup. But I live in LA now, so I did it. Oh my God, was it delicious. The pantry. My favorite place to get eggs and potatoes and the sourdough toast, because you got yolk all over the plate. What do you do with all this? You take that sourdough toast that they give you, crack the crust off of it, and you wipe it around the plate that has the egg yolk, the ketchup, the salsa, some of the remnant of the potato. You put that thing in your mouth. It's almost like having kids is great. But what you really want is the grandkids. You almost want to skip over the having the kids part just to get to the grandchildren. That's what it is. Who cares about the meal? I just want to get to the bread dipping into the remnant on the plate. The food itself wasn't really that important. That's a Clapper vision, by the way, of how to eat at the pantry. The greatest. Get there early before the line comes. All right, let's go to Michael J. in Huntington Beach. You're on with Dr. Clapper. Sorry to make you wait so long.
You crack me up, man. You give the best plugs for these places. And then I'm trying not to eat a lot of food, and you're sitting there going off about this and that. I just started 3 weeks ago, and my doctor told me I had diabetes.
Uh-oh.
And I'm in really good shape, and I was the last thing I would ever expect. But anyway, let me ask you a couple of quick things, okay?
No problem, Michael. What do you do for a living?
I clean offices and homes, and I've been doing it for 36 years, and I still love it.
Do you ever walk into the office and something bad is going on in the middle of it and they were trying to hide?
No, because I come in, I'm at my wife's office right now.
Oh, okay.
I have the keys and the alarm code, so
okay,
I don't
there
see
you
any
go.
Of that.
All right, where are you from? Where did you grow up?
Huntington Beach.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It's just a joke, so don't take it serious, but I go like this. People go, what's your name? I go, me? I'm Michael J. I sing backup. I'm drug-free. I put the crack up. My it makes people laugh.
Do you go to every year, Michael? Do you go to the U.S. Open?
I don't, because it's too crowded.
Mm,
I can watch it at home on a 60-inch TV. You know? So anyway,
Huntington Beach is a great. It's a hard place to surf. I'm a surfer. you could drown in a heartbeat over there because those waves are really intense, particularly in the wintertime. Oh, my God.
Yeah, but you're riding a longboard, too, and you can't really duck dive it. When you can duck dive a board, you escape a lot of problems.
You're exactly right. You're exactly right, Michael J. Okay, how can I help you? What's up?
Okay, so let me tell you, and then you can kind of help me. Okay, so there's a two-parter. The second part's going to be my doctor wants to give me shingle shot, pneumonia shot, and a flu shot, and I want you to tell me later what you think about that. But okay. The main question was, my two middle fingers are turning inward like arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything I can do about it? Like, it's not real bad pain, but it's starting to really bug me.
So I did knee surgery on a prize fighter named Percy Rodriguez. I'll never forget this. It's got to be like 30 years ago. And he was a champion in Canada. He was a tough guy. I love this guy. And he wore out his knee, so I fixed his knee. And then I went to make rounds the next day at the hospital at Cedars. And Percy Rodriguez is lying in his bed with these two Chinese balls. They're called boding balls. They chime in his hand, and he was rotating them like Captain Queeg from the Kane Mutiny. And I looked at him, like, go, Percy, your knee is looking great. Oh, yeah, Dr. Clapper, thanks. I've been walking already. It feels great. What are you doing with those things in your hand, those two balls? He said, Dr. Clapper, I was a prize fighter. I was a boxer, and my fingers are just riddled with arthritis, crooked, all different. You look at a basketball player's hands, all those jammed fingers that they've had over the years. It's just horrible arthritis. Nothing's lined up, and they hurt, and they ache, and they're stiff. He said, I've been to every hand specialist in the world because I traveled the world because of my living that I made boxing. And they would always want to give me cortisone shots. I said no. They would want to operate on me, put fake joints in, fuse the joints. I've been to every expert. And then I went to one guy who said, you should do this. And he took these two China, you can buy them for $10 in Chinatown, boating balls. And you put them in your hand and you rotate the balls around each other. And they make a beautiful little sound as you rotate them. He said, this is the greatest therapy that I could do for my hands. I also, like Rosie Greer from the Rams, I started doing needlepoint, fine motor work with my hands. You can even crochet, but that's too complicated. But the point is, how do you do battle with arthritis that cripples your fingers? Not with surgery, not with shots, and not with a pill. What you do is you actually ask for the most unreasonable thing. You ask your fingers to give you movement, which they don't want to do. It's not going to be easy in the beginning. But ironically, the more you ask them to move, who cares what they look like, the more movement you will get. And one of the great things that I tell patients to do is get a stack of newspapers, thin pieces of paper, okay, and a waste paper basket. Put your hand on the top page, the thin newspaper, and crumble it into a ball and fill a waste paper basket a day with those rolled up, because if you just squeeze a ball, it's not enough movement for the fingers. You actually want it to crush, to make a fist. Between the boating balls, needlepoint, and crushing the newspapers, in my opinion, Michael J., this would be the greatest therapy for your fingers and hands. Surgery is not the home run like it is if you had a bad knee, bad hip, bad shoulder. Fingers are particularly tough for joint replacements and fusions. Okay?
Yeah, I love your show, and, you know, whenever I plug it to people, I always go off and I go like this, and I'm here to tell you, you're not 19 anymore.
Well, thanks so much for listening, and I'll tell you what my thoughts are about all the other stuff. I really appreciate the kind words, and let's take another call. Let's go to Keith in Norwalk. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Dr. Clapper, long-time listener, first-time caller.
All right.
Always listen to you, yeah.
What's your favorite story that I've told over the years?
Oh, man. So many.
You like when I talk about art? You like when I talk about pizza? You like when I talk about Michelangelo?
Well, so far, I like when you talk about the pantry.
Ah! Do you think it's crazy to put fresh salsa with the ketchup when you eat the eggs? Come on.
Well, I don't particularly care for ketchup, but I'm down with the salsa. I can work with you on that.
All right, then go for it. With that sourdough toast, I don't know where it comes from or how they do it. If you dip that into the egg yolk, the salsa and some of the potato, and you take a bite of that, you just can die and go to heaven. It's fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm with you on that one.
All right. What do you do for a living, Keith?
I'm a truck driver.
What do you drive? What kind of, a big truck? An 18-wheeler?
18-wheeler, yes, sir.
Wow. So when you're driving on the highway, do you see all the women putting the makeup on while they're driving around?
Oh, you wouldn't believe what I see. we got to talk off the air. Crazy stuff, man.
Where have you driven to every state in the country?
Every western, southwest, wow, and western state.
Okay, so final question.
Now I'm just local.
Because yes, it's all about food, Keith. Do you have a favorite place that you like to pull off because the food, the fried chicken, whatever it is the best you've ever had? Tell us what the greatest meal is that you've driven to that you enjoy the most.
Right now, it comes off the top of my head is back in the day when I was eating out of the different restaurants, mm-hmm, and establishments and everything. I used to have a route to go downtown. And the pantry, and I used to start at 5 in the morning.
Yeah, that's when I'm there. I'm there Saturday mornings at that hour, and there's nobody there. Well, there are people there, but it's very unusual people actually sitting at the counter at that hour, and I love it because there's no traffic and plenty of parking.
Plenty of parking. I would hit that, well, I'd park my truck on the side, mm-hmm, and I'd go in there and have a great breakfast to start my day.
What did you order? Did you have eggs? Did you have bacon? Did you have sausage? What did you eat?
Oh, man, my favorite was, let's see, back in the day, it was
pancakes?
I can't think.
You're the only guy who got CTE from eating at the pantry. How'd that happen? Did you smack your head on the counter? What happened here, Keith?
Hey, look, 59 years old, man.
I'm 62 years old. You ain't that old.
That's why I'm calling you.
You want the secret. All right, I'll give you the secret. You know what the secret to life is, Keith? Sure. Laugh a lot. Find the humor in life. Listen, God gives you two choices. You can laugh or you can cry. Choose laughter.
I'll try as much as I can.
And try to give of yourself as much as you can. That's the key. Sir. What people don't realize is when you give, what you get back is so worth the giving.
That's what I'm learning, yeah.
All right, how can I help you? What's up with you?
My question is testosterone. I'm losing a lot of weight, and I'm trying to eat at least 5 times a day. Mm-hmm. I try to eat a big breakfast.
Why are you losing the weight?
I'm working out. Mm-hmm. I'm changing my diet. I'm trying to eat healthier because I've been diagnosed with pre-diabetic, mm-hmm, and also cholesterol.
Good.
So I changed my diet. Good. All totally. So while I changed my diet, I'm also dropping weight.
Good.
And also losing muscle. Mm-hmm. So I'm in the gym about 2-3 times a week, depending on my schedule. And also, when I'm not in the gym, I'm walking and I'm swimming.
Good.
But I can't seem to keep the weight on. I went from 200, because I'm 6'5". I went from 200, now I'm down to 187.
Okay.
And so I'm trying to pack it on, but I can't seem to keep it on. So a trainer told me might want to look into taking some testosterone pills because that will help me put weight on, also help me build muscle. And I want to get your thoughts on that.
I'm a skeptical New Yorker, Keith. You listen to the show. You know how my mind works. If it sounds too good to be true, it is. Yeah, the testosterone will have all the positives. You can check the boxes of all the things that it's going to do that you want from it. But, Keith, the secret to life is, and the question you always have to ask, not of an orthopedic surgeon like me, but of an internist, is what are the negatives? What's the side effects? You remember Lyle Alzado? He played for the Raiders?
Right.
He's not here anymore. You know why? Because he took steroids, anabolic steroids. Now, does every person who take it end up with cancer? No. But you always have to look at what are the side effects. And individually, how will it affect you? You're 59. We are not 29. You're not going to be able to go to the gym and bulk up muscles. Those days are over. If you want to do it, that's fine. And you get my opinion, that's all it is. You cannot do this without the auspices of a really good internal medicine doctor guiding you. But you always have to ask that question. Doc, tell me what the side effects are. And if they say, oh, they're small, they don't exist, or that's not true. Everything you take has a side effect. That's the question I want you to ask. And I really appreciate you and all that you have said to me today. It's a pleasure. It's really, I do this show to be able to talk to people like you, Keith. I want you to find a total stranger today. Do something nice for them, Keith, and make the world one little bit better place because you've touched someone else just like I've touched you. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate you. Have a great weekend.
Okay, thanks you too, much. Young man. God bless. All right, we'll take a break. We'll pay some bills. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on ESPN LA 710. I listen to this music and I go back in time wearing my Huckapoo shirt made of 100% rayon. There you go. Do the hustle. Yesterday in the operating room, I always begin my surgeries listening to Eric Clapton. He calms the room down. The end of the day, I play Sade. That's the last surgery I do. But in the middle, for whatever reason, yesterday, I was playing Barry White. And it was this young medical student from Texas. And she couldn't help but moving her hips and singing. It was fantastic. I said, your father probably listens to Barry White. She goes, yes, he does. Because I'm old enough to be the same age as your dad. But it's great. I said, you came here to learn orthopedic surgery and you're going to learn about disco. I know a lot about the discs. And I know a lot about the disco. All right, the number's 877-710-ESPN. Let's go to Bill in Redondo Beach. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Hey, Doc, how are you doing?
I'm good, because you know where you live in Redondo Beach? They got the best ice cream in the world at Handel's.
I love it down there.
Have you been to Handel's?
No, I have not. I'm new to the area.
You're new to the area. Well, I just gave you a billion-dollar idea. Handel's ice cream. Tell them Dr. Clapper sent you. Maybe they'll give you a free cone. The Chocoholic chocolate flavor is the greatest chocolate ice cream I've ever had. The milk that they make, it comes from the cows, not in California, in Ohio. Oh, my God. Just like Grater's ice cream in Ralph's, the black raspberry chip ice cream. Amazing. Best ice cream ever until I ate this Handel's ice cream. And you get to go have it in Redondo Beach. There's a line, so I'm warning you, but get on the line. It's worth it. Handel's ice cream. Bill, what do you do for a living?
Sales.
What do you sell? What do you sell?
Pharmaceutical.
Oh, what kind of pharmaceuticals? Are you a drug dealer? What are you telling me here?
I'm a legal. I tell everyone I'm a legal drug dealer.
What's the drug that you sell?
I have an antidepressant, and then I have one for ADHD.
ADHD. So you're on both ends of the spectrum. You got people who don't want to talk and people who don't stop talking. Good for you. You're like a walking you're like a walking thunderstorm where the cold front meets the warm front and you make a thunderstorm. That's what you're doing for a living. You sell the stuff that make people depressed and make people too active. That's hilarious.
That's right.
Good for you, Bill.
That's right.
Where are you from originally?
Las Vegas.
You were born and raised in Las Vegas?
Yeah. It's hot over there.
What was that like? Did you work in the casinos in high school?
No, I tried to stay away from the casinos.
You stayed away from the casinos. Did you get to see the White Tiger?
Yes.
Isn't that amazing?
Definitely.
Those were amazing. To me, that's the greatest thing about Las Vegas, is that White Tiger.
Yeah. I like the Lions, too.
Yeah. Unfortunately, he nearly killed the guy taking care of him, that Roy. But those White Tigers are amazing. Okay, how can I help you? What's up, Bill?
I had a question about my knee. Mm-hmm. I've had a meniscus surgery and then an ACL surgery in my left knee.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been over 10 years. The doctors, orthopedics say that the ACL is intact and strong.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been going to physical therapy for a couple years, if anything, just to keep up the physical activity going. But when I try to play basketball sometimes, or even just running in general, I feel, you know, swelling, tightness in the knee. Mm-hmm. And I do the MRIs, and they say, one doctor said that there's nothing wrong. The other one said there's a hole in my cartilage. Mm. So I'm not really sure what to do.
So at 36 years old, you're still really, really young. But in 4 years, you're going to turn 40. And the wheels are going to start to come off the wagon. I should trademark this term, Bill, called ager-size, that you actually should exercise differently depending on your age. At 36 years old, with your history of your knee, I would certainly let you still play basketball, all right? Which is the greatest sport ever invented, but it's an abuse. It's jumping, it's twisting, it's turning. Kobe Bryant's not doing it, you know, anymore for that reason. Neither is Michael Jordan. You eventually get to the point where you just can't do it well. But you can do it because you're a weekend warrior. You're a recreational basketball player. But I'm still telling you, it's one of the things we love, but it's an abuse. Therefore, the early arthritis that you probably have in this knee from these injuries and surgeries is to the rotor, not to the brake pad. The meniscus is the brake pad. You probably have the beginnings of arthritis, which means there's some damage in the rotor. If your brakes are squeaking, the mechanic says, hey, it's your brake pad, it's your meniscus, you'll do well with a scope in either repairing it or cleaning it up. But if the mechanic says to you, you're beyond this with the squeaking, you're beyond the brake pad, you've damaged the rotors, you better not let them tell you we can just work on your brake pad. No, you got to do something about the rotors. But in the case of the body, once you get to the articular cartilage, the cartilage that coats the end of the bone, which is the rotors, we can't make new teeth. There's no hair coming back on top of my head. We don't have a good solution. We're trying, but we don't really have a good solution for that yet, other than titanium, which you're not having at this point. So my advice to you is this. Don't let them stick a needle in your knee of anything. Cortisone, stem cells, Synvisc. There's all kinds of things. Be holistic if you can. There's a book I wrote with Lindy Yui called Heal Your Knees, and it'll show you exercises to do in the pool, the bike, the elliptical. Those are nurturing exercises that you need to be doing during the week so you can play basketball on the weekends. You know what I hate for your knee, Bill? I hate, I'm from New York, we hate things. I hate treadmill, lunges, squats, stair machines, and weights for your knees. I love the pool, I love the bike, I love the elliptical. Do the nurturing exercises during the week, and that way you can enjoy the basketball you're going to play on the weekend. Capiche?
Yeah, that makes sense. So I don't do any weights right now, but, you know, at therapy I do bands, elastic bands.
Yeah, you don't need that. Do the bike with resistance. You can do upper extremity, curls, bench presses. I don't have a problem with that, but for your legs, there's no better way at 36 to get your quad, your hamstring, your calf muscles strong than the stationary bike with resistance. Half an hour, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. You can do other pool exercises, bike exercises, elliptical, upper extremity weights. Take a yoga class, but you don't have to do every position. Do Pilates, but don't do the reformer. You know, you can do many, many things as you meet Father Time, face Father Time. And just like Clint Eastwood said, you want to keep the old man out. That's what you'll be doing.
How important are the glutes?
Everything's important. Take a dance class. You'll learn muscles that ache that you didn't even know you had. It's all important. They're all work in balance. They not only work together, but some of them shut off, some of them turn on. In order for you to get into a chair, right, to sit down from a standing position to a chair, you have to shut off your quadriceps. It has to be turned off so you can turn on your hamstrings to sit down. Guess what you have to do to go from a seated position to stand up? You have to turn on the quadriceps, but you also have to turn off the hamstring. This is how brilliant the computer of our brain is, the circuitry, the electronics, and the nerves. It's fascinating. Keep it up, Bill, and thanks so much for checking in with us.
Appreciate it.
I want you to find a total stranger today, Bill. Do something nice for them. That's how you'll be thanking me.
Thanks, Doc.
All right. God bless. We'll take a break, pay some bills. Coming back. Oh, boy. I got to tell you about a shoulder surgery I did this week. It was fascinating. And why I did something different in a 50-year-old than I would do in a 20-year-old. The injury was the same, but depending on your age, the treatment is different. I'll explain more. Coming up next on the Weekend Warriors Show here on ESPN LA 710. Google the Guggenheim. The great Tupac. California love. Yep. I get to go surfing tomorrow with the gang. Can't wait to be there. But just to pay off the tease, this week I did a shoulder surgery for a torn labrum in a 50-year-old. If that torn labrum inside his shoulder was a torn labrum in a 20-year-old, I would have put stitches and repaired it. But in a 50-year-old, the fraying, the age-related changes, in my opinion, it's best to actually just clean it up, give it a haircut. It's called a debridement. Because if you put stitches, you can make it too tight, and they'll have even more pain afterwards. So it's fascinating to me, depending on the age of the patient, the treatment is different. You always want to try to avoid surgery first, and you'll hear me every week talk about that. Change what you're doing that may be hurting you. Try some physical therapy, even a chiropractor if you need it sometimes. Nothing wrong with that. But if it still speaks to you, you got to listen to your body. Just taking pills and shots to make the pain go away is as ludicrous as taking Robitussin, a cough medicine. If you got pneumonia that's causing you to cough, you need antibiotics to stop coughing, not cough medicine. So use your common sense. Don't let someone talk you into something, and don't fall for it. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. Next week, I cannot wait to talk to my guest, because it'll be all about it. Italy, another favorite of mine. He's one of the greatest hip surgeons I know. He's going to be calling in from New York. The great Dr. Robert Bulli, an Italian-American dream. That's what he is. That's his family. Until then, I leave you with Volare, which means I'm singing and I'm flying. I'll see you on the radio.